Good morning. Today is Wednesday, the 13th of July. Joining us this morning, once and again, Supervisor for the 5th, Mr. Steve Madrone. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
It's hopefully going to clear off today. I don't know.
Well, we're back into kind of a typical summer pattern, aren't we?
I hope.
Yeah.
That overheating thing is a little too much for some of us, yeah. Particularly with the cloud cover still being in effect.
Ugh. Yeah.
Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
You bet.
Why do we say gum up the works?
Well, gum can certainly gum things up, that's for sure. But I don't know. Let's hear from the book.
Veteran lumberman who reached North America very early could hardly believe their eyes. It seemed impossible that a single continent could boast such a profusion and variety of fine trees. One of them, the sweet gum, stretched in a broad belt from Connecticut to Missouri and from Florida to Mexico. Now often called red gum, the tree is still a major source of lumber. Aside from its size and abundance, the gum interested pioneers because of its fragrant resin. Lumbermen didn't like the stuff since it clogged up their saws, but venturesome boys discovered it was pleasant to chew, so they frequently went on gumming expeditions. That's a little bit older than the older folks doing a gumming. Okay.
That's right.
Tangent, sorry. After gathering a quantity of the sticky stuff, a youngster was likely to be daubed with it from head to foot. Gum was hard to wash from clothing and all but impossible to clean from hair. Proverbial sayings came to include many references to the stuff. As a result, any person throwing a project into confusion is still compared with the resin-smeared boy in charge with having gummed up the works.
There you go. Yeah, that's like somebody coming forward with concerns about a project at the last moment instead of coming forward early on when it can be dealt with.
I think it's called Johnny Come Lately, right?
Yeah, there's a number of different sayings for that one, aren't there?
Yeah, and reactions a little bit more emotional than that.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. And if it's in your hair, good luck.
Yeah. Thanks.
For the visitors that are only listening.
Yeah. Well, I think they're familiar with me. Have you gotten any concrete stuff out of the efforts, out of the balancing, reconciliation, knowing where the county is financially? Rex was on last week and said that reconciliation from 2019. I don't know how much use you guys' vernacular now. 2019, 2020 had happened.
Yes.
And so at least things were going in the right direction.
Yes.
What kind of update do we have in the last week?
Well, you know, transitions are always difficult for folks, and we certainly had a lot going on in the last couple of years in regards to our finances. The outcome of the election is pretty clear. Cheryl Dillingham won, and we have worked out a settlement agreement with Karen Paz Dominguez. And, you know, I want to thank her and her staff for all the hard work they do. But, you know, we've got a new person in the office, and now it's time to rally the troops and start working on cleaning up the books and closing the years and figuring out exactly where we're at. And, you know, that's going to take a lot of work on the part of all kinds of folks involved to try and make sure that we can work together and get this done.
So is the progression then reconciliation for 2021 and then 21-22, or to stick with 2019-2020, get the reconciliation done, balance it, get the audit trued up, push it out, go on to the next year?
You have to do the oldest stuff first. You got to get that done because it forms the foundation for the newer stuff. And without that, you can't really work on the newer stuff.
Still have hopes of being able to formally adopt a budget?
Yes.
In October?
Yes. You know, I mean, there are a lot of things that are behind in terms of scheduling and getting them completed. But the fact is that we do know pretty well where we're at with our budget, I would say, at least from my perspective. And unless departments have seriously overspent their budgets, we're fine. And they don't, because frankly, department directors are personally liable for overspending their budgets, right? But also because we have 15 to 20% vacancy rates in almost every department. So it's pretty hard to overspend your budget.
With a hiring freeze in place also now.
You know, even with a hiring, did we really need a hiring freeze? Because we're not really hiring. You know, so, and even with increased wages, that has had a positive effect in the Sheriff's Department, according to Sheriff Hansel, in recruiting, retaining, and morale. So we're pleased to hear that. But in many of the other departments, it hasn't had the same dramatic effect yet. And a lot of that is because the folks working in the kind of the lowest rung within, you know, wage-wise.
Entry-level
positions, yeah. Are barely above minimum wage. And it's really hard work, right? So we're having a hard time recruiting people for a lot of that kind of work. So I don't think that we've overspent any budgets in any significant way. Yes, we've been having to pull in some money to help deal with lost revenue.
The deficit.
Other kinds of things like that. But what we do know is we had a massive increase in sales tax from the stimulus money and the unemployment. We also had a major increase in...
And now inflation. Don't forget that one.
There you go. Yeah, thank you very much. And we have a lot of increased property taxes, which is also not that great for those that live here. But for government, it meant increased income. So I think we're sitting pretty good. We just got to get the books closed and get it all wrapped up.
The deficit that the CAO was referencing 3 months ago, four months ago, is that been fully addressed? Is that, I mean, if you don't know how accurate it is, because it's kind of based on not smoke and mirrors, but let's say wisps of smoke and shattered glass.
Yeah, there you go. Hard to see.
I think that's the big thing that is kind of the hold your breath, let's wait and see, and then once that happens one way or the other, then you can act.
Yeah, there were certainly a lot of discrepancies, and some of them very large in the millions and stuff, but it doesn't appear at this point that any of that was fraud or anything like that. It was basically just paperwork that didn't get completed properly and cross checks across the board to make sure it all balanced on each side. It's that kind of stuff, which is reconciliation, you know, bank reconciliation and things like that. So
you think that hole is pretty accurate?
I think that we're going to find out that we're actually doing pretty good. But, you know, it's important to be able to move our systems forward. The auditor controller had changed things and started wanting to account for everything. And, you know, in the real world, you've got to make priorities. And, you know, you can't chase pennies. You've got to chase the dollars and balance things the best you can with the staff you have. We've been working on a manual as well to try and make sure that we've got institutionalized processes so people know what they need to submit when they make requests.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, there was something in the news last week, I think, the governor, before he left to Montana, had done something with marijuana taxes. Is that him going to, one, what was it? I just kind of saw a glancing reference to it. Is there an impact to Humboldt County financially?
No, those taxes, the cultivation tax is what you're talking about at the state level, and that's been eliminated for the next year or two, I believe. It's a temporary elimination while they look at a number of
other
things.
Now, wait a minute. Does the state do anything temporary?
Isn't everything temporary in life?
Yeah. I remember sales tax going from 5 to 6, temporary.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, my sitting in this seat is just temporary. Another 4 years, I won't be here.
Well, I will guarantee that one.
I'm not going to be here in 4 years, okay? Just saying. I'll be 74, and that'll be good enough for me. 50 years of public service. I think that's good.
I think mid-70s ought to be what the mid-60s has been.
Yeah, you start looking at it. We're still young men, right? Absolutely.
Yeah,
until you walk by the window in the mirror.
Yeah, or try to move around again.
At any rate, so they did eliminate that, and that does not affect the county because we didn't get that income. It affects the state, but of course they have a massive surplus right now, so that's certainly not going to hurt them. But it does benefit the farmer. You know, it was one more layer of tax and burden on the local farmer, so it's a good thing for them. It's given them some relief.
Do you sense, I know I have the belief, I think every one of the supervisors knows folks that are in the marijuana industry.
Certainly.
Either really directly or tangentially.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a growing recognition that perhaps they need to all pull together rather than being a bunch of cats and just kind of working independently with some of the costs. I mean, if you're growing a product, mm-hmm. you may or may not have the ability or capabilities to handle all the financing.
Certainly.
Or to handle
labor
personnel
reporting.
Or labor law, mm-hmm. or any of these other things that businesses,
certainly.
You know, we've all been dealing with forever.
Yeah.
But because they all kind of got thrown out there all one shot, and some of them may not have had those abilities,
mm-hmm.
or certainly not having mentors,
mm-hmm.
It kind of threw them for a loop.
It did, and so that's why some co-ops have formed. One of them is the Uplift Co-op in the Mattole River Valley, where I believe there's maybe 10 or 12 farmers who have joined forces into a co-op. And by doing that, they do share resources, marketing resources, administrative resources, and other things. So that's a great model. A lot of really good folks involved in that, local farmers. You know, the industry, it's an interesting industry on many, many levels. They're one of the few industries where you don't get to write off your expenses. Can you imagine if you as a radio station...
At the state level, they can't?
State or federal. Because the federal illegality of it, you're still not really allowed to write off your expenses, you know. I don't know for certain. To my knowledge, you're not able to write anything off, any of your expenses, right? Now, are you able to do that at the state level with your state taxes? I couldn't answer that question. I haven't really delved into that level. But I know on the federal level, it's absolutely not allowed.
Well, sure, because it's not recognized.
What business would survive if they weren't able to write off their expenses? I mean, hardly anything would, right? Because that's a crucial element in doing business, is being able to write off the expenses and get to your net, you know, not your gross. You know, you're not taxed on your gross. You're taxed on your net at the end of all the deductions and this and that and everything else, you know, in general. I'm just talking generally speaking.
Yeah, trying to reference back to what a sub S is.
Yeah.
I think we do.
Right. So those are changes that need to happen. And also the other one is direct sales. You know, if this is another change that the state is considering.
The roadside stand, kind of like what we see in Pepperwood.
Farmers markets. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, but that's probably going to take federal legalization for that to occur as well.
The state prohibits that now?
They do because of the federal illegality. But what we have started to see is these...
But they're allowing retailers, and they're giving business licenses.
There are sale opportunities happening at events where there will be a distributor and a dispensary, and the consumer will come up to a booth and look at a product from a farmer and say, oh, I like that. And then they'll go over to the dispensary and buy that product from the farmer through the dispensary. So it's still not direct sales. There's
so
still
it's kind of like going to Red Lobster and you say, that one?
Yes.
And then you go over and then
pay the other guy.
Cook it. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Something like that. So there's a lot of changes that are going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years. But, you know, Humboldt always should have really only been trying to go after the niche market of the highest quality, like Napa wine. You know, we've talked about this before. And it's been
But even Napa's a major producer. I mean, Ernest and Julio were still number one volume.
It is. And frankly, Napa makes more money off the tourism around wine than they do off the wine.
Well, I think something about being in a pretty area.
It is.
And having enough hotels to handle it.
And boutique wineries and things.
And
you know?
Be able to create and develop.
Yeah.
But now they're having a tough time because of housing costs.
Absolutely.
Going through the roof. And
right. Where do you get your workers, you know, and all that?
Where do you get your workers? But the land value is absolutely worth five times as much. Are you going to keep your hotel rates the same?
Right. That's exactly right.
Whoops.
Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything triggers another thing, doesn't it? Yeah, it's all interconnected.
Keep me behind the big trees. Or, pardon me, the
real.
Oh,
we talk about the redwood curtain?
The real trees. Yeah. Home. Yeah. But I think there are some parallels in a bunch of different industries.
Certainly are.
That could be looked at, and perhaps now because of reality.
Yes.
Some of those things will start coming into effect.
Well, like Oric. It was in the news recently, right? We can talk about that.
We will when we come back.
Forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. So you kind of teased a little bit about Oric, so come on across the threshold here.
You betcha.
I've always contended that the one community that got hammered the worst with Redwood Park and Redwood Park 2 was not Scotia. It was not, you know, where the mill sites were. It was, well, and Oric did have some, but Oric.
Yeah.
You can tell, but just look at the school.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, what it was built for versus what it has today.
Burnt out shells of a gas station and a motel. You know?
And the old historicals falling down, right. And there's no visitors serving in the park, next to the park. They got rid of the fish hatchery.
Took the RVs off the highway on the beach.
And that's such a simple, easy, quick fix.
Let them come back there again. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and maybe it's only half. Maybe you only go one wide instead of three wide. But all of a sudden, there you get the seasonal influx coming in, and maybe that's enough to kind of get things stirred up a little bit. But are any of those what?
Well, so there are a lot of proposals for visitor serving facilities, glamping and camping and motel renovations. Like the old Palm Motel and Cafe.
Renovation or destruction and start over?
Some of it's renovation. Some of it really needs to be tear it down and start over, like the Green Valley and the gas station there.
Yeah, downtown. That should have happened about 25 years ago.
That's exactly right. And so we did help move people out of there, and we've been working to demolish it, and new buyers have lined up, but there's all kinds of issues with liens and other kinds of things there that are holding things up. Bottom line is, Oric has been constrained for doing a lot of this development by the lack of a sewer system.
Yeah, there's a moratorium.
They're all on septic systems, right? Yep. And they have a high groundwater table with Redwood Creek right there. They're in the valley. Duh. And so we are working on a project now with the Army Corps and the ranchers to pull back some of the levees at the end of them, not to, you know, make the town vulnerable, but at the very end, pull them back several
down
hundred
at the mouth
feet,
of the creek.
Down at the mouth to restore estuary functions for salmon and steelhead, but also to help the ranchers' ranch lands drain more quickly so that they can get better pasture. So it's kind of a win-win approach that we're using. When we pull those levees, that creates a lot of fill that has to go somewhere. Well, a lot of that fill is sand and gravel, and that's the components of Wisconsin mounds, or what you call, you know, pre-treatment mounds.
Oh, I thought you were going to say concrete.
Well, it is for that as well. Bottom line
But not salt.
No.
Salt beach,
The bottom line is that whenever you're doing big construction projects, cut, fill, balance. You know, whatever you're going to cut, where is it going to go? And when you can come up with innovative and integrated ways to use that fill right there nearby, the cost of the project goes down because now you're...
Sure, no transportation.
Now you're solving two problems with one thing, right? And so there may be some ways that Oric can figure out. They've got engineers involved. They're doing studies. They're trying to figure out.
Do they have the money to really punch it through?
They have some grant money to be able to get the studies done. And then, of course, you'll need the money to build it all. But I think there's some really neat, innovative opportunities that we may be looking at to try and help make that happen. Neighborhood systems. Maybe it won't be an entire town system in one place, but it might be neighborhood systems with pretreatment mounds. Oh, basically, large septic systems that can handle a whole neighborhood. That kind of stuff. So
a leach field, shared leach field.
But leach fields that are built up on the ground, so you get that leaching in soil before it enters the groundwater. That's what a Wisconsin mound is, or a pretreatment mound. But out in Fieldbrook, everybody has to do Wisconsin mounds now.
Right.
Because of the high water table. Same situation.
So can you do that with the existing structures, or are you going to have to, I'm thinking they're gravity fed, I would presume, rather than.
Well, ideal is gravity fed, but often these become pumped.
Okay.
Pump systems, because you're moving it uphill into a mound versus down into the ground.
We got to visit that one last week out here.
Right, mound versus ground, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that is something then that the Coastal Commission will permit?
You know, right now it's an issue already, you know, with septic pollution. So, yes, everybody is desperate to find a solution that will make it better.
And so they're in that equation also because...
Nothing's gone to the commission yet, but, you know, my knowledge...
Well, you know somebody who might know somebody.
I do, and I know their operations, and I know that they're looking to improve things, and that's what this would do.
So maybe while it may not be ideal, it's
right.
better?
Correct.
And they'll go with better instead of ideal?
There is no perfect, Brian. I'm just saying, you know.
Oh, it just depends on who you talk to, what end of the that determination you are.
Everything has its impacts, and the goal is to try and reduce those impacts and do the best we can.
So part and parcel of that, would that reduce the flooding on the, what do we say? If you're driving into Oryx, so you're northbound on the right-hand side, so that would be, I guess, the east?
Well,
now,
the right-hand side is Strawberry Creek, and it has issues with drainage as well. And it has to interface with Redwood Creek.
Right.
And so, yes, it's those lower pastures right as you enter Oryx. Mainly on the left, though, on the north side, and also on the north side of the river.
Is there any discussion at all from either the feds or from BLM about allowing the RV guys to park along...
It's come up over and over again, but it's not going to happen.
It's
not going to happen. And frankly, that doesn't help. You know, it helps the Oryx community in that people would come downtown and shop.
The grocery stores.
But there's no grocery store, really. There's a couple of mini marts.
Well, not anymore.
Yeah, right.
Nobody's.
But the Yurok tribe bought the Shoreline gas station there, right? When you come into town on the left.
The Peanut.
Where the Peanut is, as most people will know. But
too bad it isn't signed.
You and I have been around. The gray hairs know about the Peanut. It could be a great interpretive site.
You keep visiting this hair thing.
You brought it up.
Yeah.
So bottom line is they are going to be building a whole new facility there that's going to be two-story with some offices upstairs and a full-on supermarket along with EV charging and other kinds of things like that.
So more than what they have at Klamath?
Yes.
With PEMA, bigger...
Yes, a bigger setup, exactly. So
diesel?
You know, it's funny how everybody went to diesel, and now it's the expensive thing.
Oh, yeah, I'm laughing all the time.
They caught you on that
one,
right?
Yeah, KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, so with Oryx kind of getting some TLC now, I think that's probably, when Anna was supervisor, we would talk about it, and everybody subsequent, is there anything that can be done? Not while that moratorium is in place.
Yeah.
Has the moratorium been lifted, or are there thoughts about that? Because I would think that they're maybe short of Trinidad. There's not going to be too many pieces of property that are going to be worth more than scenic, beach, national park, lagoons, elk. I mean, what are you missing?
Yeah. Now, Oryx's going to see major investment over the next 20 years.
Which is going to change the community significantly, which I think is a plus.
Right. I don't know that there's a moratorium in place as much as there is. If you're going to build, you're going to have to deal with the septic issues. Right. And so you could call that a moratorium, But if anybody can come up with a solution in a particular place.
Plans that will be approved.
Correct. And yeah. You know, I've seen people start trying to say, okay, rather than doing the whole big development, I'm going to do a corner of it. And I'm going to do a phased approach to adding the systems to be able to deal with septic.
And the Community Services District is able to do that?
Well, they are. The CSD doesn't actually regulate sewer. There is no...
No, but they're kind
they're
of
just
first,
water.
The first level of
they are,
government, though.
And they have grants to study an improved sewage treatment system in Oric. And when that is implemented, they would then take on sewer authorities, right? And probably there would be some assessment to be able to do that. Right now, they're just water as far as I know. I don't think they have parks authorities or any other authorities, just water. But they also house the volunteer fire department, right?
Yes, they do.
So they've been working with that and dealing with the tsunami siren that doesn't work and other kinds of things. That came up at our meeting a couple of weeks ago.
I think, didn't Troy indicate that they're going to be getting rid of the sirens because...
Yes, they don't work.
Based on the wind and nobody hears them. Right. And then the mechanical part.
It was a gift from NOAA, and the county said, oh, great, let's do them. But then they never really maintained them, and they aren't functional, and they weren't really as useful as people imagined.
It's kind of like the park. Here's your land.
Yes.
Now mow it.
There you go. But I do think we're going to resolve these issues in Oric with sewage treatment. And once that is worked out, then we will see increased investment and development in Oric. There's no doubt about it. It's ripe for it. I mean, there's no national park anywhere where you can go to an entrance town and it looks like that. It's just not the case.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. On either side.
No. And the people who have lived there a long, long time are heavily engaged in trying to help make that happen. The Hufford family in particular has made investments. They bought the Palm Cafe. They got a Headwaters grant. And they're working to restore that and bring that back into functionality.
As a 50s, or are they going to...
A 50s place, yeah, with palm trees.
Well,
it's still going to be an older
a place
motif.
In Santa Rosa that was old style, but
but
had been renovated and cleaned up, and it's really a nice resort.
Exactly. You know, I don't know all the details of the ones.
Come on, man, jump into it.
Well, I'm trying to help on the larger scale.
This could be the legacy thing.
Yes,
I mean, can you imagine if Oric was actually
right?
I don't want to denigrate, but it was viable and active and humming, and people were
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, the school was active, was full, and it was a place where people were as excited about as they are in Trinidad.
Absolutely, you know, every community deserves that. I mean, when you look around Humboldt County, the only town I'm aware of that doesn't have a lot of vacancies on the commercial space and everything is Arcata. You know, I mean, look at the situation. You know, Eureka has empty spaces everywhere.
Yeah,
downtown,
left and right.
You know? Same with McKinleyville. Same with Willow Creek. You know, throughout my district, you see a lot of vacancy. And so what
is
that?
So what's the common denominator?
The common denominator is housing.
Okay.
And,
when you said my district,
yes,
you knew where I was going. Good move to take a left-hand turn on that one. But it as everything else is this pent-up energy, I would think that those who are opportunistic and are looking for those moments, this has got to be as exciting as what Samoa is.
Absolutely. Each of these communities has their own vision and what they'd like to see happen. You know, McKinleyville, we're getting close to having a town center ordinance that we'll be bringing to the Planning Commission and the board eventually. And that in combination with an improved Vista Point Park, which we've talked about on this show before, and with Steve Mosher's build out of the Airport Business Park, which he says once the Vista Point Park is done, that will pull visitors off the highway. They'll need to spend the night. We only have one motel in McKinleyville.
Well, and the airport expansion,
And the airport expansion. All these things are going to increase the development of the Airport Business Park. And the combination of those three things is going to bring money into town that's going to change the economic basis in town from a bedroom community to having outside income coming in to support small business.
The property that's across from the high school.
Yes.
What's the story with that?
Sorensen's property, yeah.
He
is a railroad aficionado, and he used to store some of the old engines from the Mattole and other places in those barns. There used to be a slot in the roof.
Yeah. Okay. So no immediate plans for housing there yet.
None that I'm aware of.
Thanks for coming by.
Well, we can talk about housing.
Yeah. See everybody tomorrow.